This is Jeff.
This is Brandon.
We're the Film Blurs. This episode is brought to you by
Puma. Presents the new AC Milan third kit for the 2021-22 season. The bold new progressive jersey takes traditional design and rewrites the rules to push the boundaries and defy convention. The new AC Milan third kit creates a fearless new expression of the club's identity and challenges tradition by reimagining conventional football kits in a brand new approach that merges football and streetwear culture. Puma, we are forever faster. Puma.com.
Get your films on with the Blurs.
Once an idea has taken hold of the brain, it's almost impossible to eradicate.
Unpacking movies has never been more spot on, woke, fire, and just plain lit.
They are lit all the time.
So if you're unsure whether or not to plop down some cash for a film, check out the Blurs.
When a man with a 45 meets a man with a rifle, the man with a pistol is a dead man.
Brando's got what plants crave.
It's got electrolytes.
You really only need to hang, mean bastard. But mean bastards, you need to hang.
Don't say you weren't warned. Ridiculous. Here's Brandon and Jeff.
All right. And welcome to episode 21 of the Film Blurs. 21's my favorite number. Giggity. I'm Jeff Stewart, a.k.a. Revengeman Button, a.k.a. Uncle Jeffrey. And I'm joined here with my co-host.
I'm Brandon Norwood, a.k.a. Hero Protagonist, a.k.a. the true father of Joe's kids, a.k.a. Papi Chulo, still sticking Molly in all your women's butt and getting your grandma pregnant, a.k.a. Papi Chulo, a.k.a. Man, I have so many AKs, guys. Ruff McGruff, still pulling, ripping runs, a.k.a. the Lethal Protector. And that one will make sense later.
Oh man, your AKAs, your rap sheet is so long. I love it.
Gotta give the people what they want.
Yeah, you know, I hear you. I feel you.
That'll make sense.
That'll make sense.
Yeah, it'll make sense later.
All right.
One of these fucking dumbass movies I'll be talking about.
Oh, all right. So, we chose violence today. I see. All right, let's do this. Let's tear into something.
I'm kind of mad this shit made money. So we'll get to it.
We'll get to it.
So let's start off with real quickly the International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees strike, and it matters because all of our shit that we love is gonna stop, and all they're asking for is higher pay, better wages, healthcare, dental, eye vision, and they're asking for at least no more than 12 hours a day.
Yeah, and all of that seems super, super fair because, you know, no matter like what you see out, you know, in the theater and stuff like that, you see the stars, you see the director and stuff like that, but it's the crew, it's the people who actually are making the films, you know?
Yeah, if you're ever in a chance like I was, or if Jeff has been, to ever direct a project, or even produce a project, you live and die by your crew. So like, I've never worked 16 or 18 hour days just because I'm that fucking strict with getting shit done. Like my days have been 12, 13 hours, sometimes 10 even, because I'm that thorough, because I prep hard. I've never seen an unhappy crew member when I was shooting shit. And if there was a problem, I would tell them, come to me directly. Don't go to your head of the department. Come to me and I will talk to the head of the department, because that can always backfire. I learned from the Joker Q&A. This is something you don't do during a Q&A. Somebody was a set dresser on Joker. During the Q&A, instead of waiting to go up to Todd Phillips after a movie, said during the Q&A, hey, did you think the set was a fun place? He was like, I mean, we're making a movie. It's not really a fun movie. He's like, oh, well, I worked on the movie. He's like, oh, okay. What department? He's like, yeah, set dresser. The head set dresser was like really shitty to all of us. And he was really evil and all this. And and Todd Phillips was just like sitting there like, I don't know what to say. I only worked with the heads of departments. I don't know what to say, man. And right. That's some unprofessional shit that you absolutely don't do.
Right, right. I just got off ADing a project and we lived and died by our crew. Like it was a skeleton crew, but they kicked ass. And like, I never asked them to do more than I was going to do. So yeah, we did pull 16 hours, but I was there for those 16 hours. You know, even when they were loading the grip truck and stuff like that, I helped them and all that other stuff. So like 12 hours is you
it's
know.
It's a lot.
It's a lot, you know? I mean, I get it, you're making a movie. You know, it's hard work. It's like, hurry up and wait. You know, you have to wait for the lighting to be right. You have to wait for the actors to get out of makeup and hair and stuff like that. It's long days, but they don't have to be arduously grueling long days for no money.
And here's the thing. The Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers, you guys got to really step up here and do the right thing. Also, all these studio executives, like y'all are getting paid millions of dollars every year. And you're investing millions of dollars into these shows and to these movies. What's another 3 weeks anyway to have shorter days? Just do it. Especially during miniseries, because this is why this is happening, because a lot of this shit is the streaming shit, because it's just shooting show after show after show.
Right, right, right. And this is the, you know, the price you pay. You know, like just with the writer's strike years back, you know, can't not treat people well. I mean, there's plenty of money on the table for everybody. You know,
if $15 an hour for people who are literally breaking their backs, can't see their families, and then are driving home on top of that, almost getting into car crashes because they're so burnt out and tired. Yeah. I mean, $15 an hour, bro. I make more than that at my fucking shitty day job right now.
Dude, 7-Eleven is starting at $15 an hour now.
Yeah. Dude, I don't know why people are working electrical grip in all these really great jobs on
highly
set.
Highly skilled
yeah,
jobs.
And being paid dog shit with no fucking benefits.
Highly, like these people are, like whenever I see the G&E crew or whatever like that do their thing, I was like, oh, okay, all right, so you guys are magicians. You're just making fucking magic because I don't know how this works.
So that's all we got. That's all I got to say about that. I hope it shakes out for them. But
I mean, it will. Just like, you know, I said that Disney would never cave to Scarlett Johansson's, request just because, you know, money. But they, you know, they came to a reconciliation. You know, I don't know what the deal is. You know, you can work together to make money and pay people what they're owed.
I think people in general, just Americans in general, don't matter what you do or where you're from. I think motherfuckers are just tired of people not getting paid what they're owed.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
And that's what it's come down to, is like motherfuckers want to live. You know what I'm saying? Like a dude who owns a restaurant in New York City started paying his workers minimum $25 an hour. And he even said, he's like, yo, it's still not enough. He's like, inflation, because cost of living has gone up across the board on everything.
Right.
A financial analyst said that minimum wage should be $28.
I don't see a problem with that.
Yeah.
At all.
Yeah.
Like here's my thing. Like just talking about the job market and everything like that. I guess we're becoming a political show now. That a lot of these jobs are, you know, they're starting off at like $30,000, you know, but they're requiring 10 years of experience. Like if I have 10 years worth of experience doing anything, you're not paying me the base amount. You're not starting me at 30.
And right? Here's the thing. Most of those are just entry-level positions. Like, I've applied for entry-level positions out of school, and they're like, oh, yeah, you need 4 years worth of experience. I'm like, motherfucker,
like, this
where?
Is entry-level.
Where? Right. Yeah. Like, where? Like either you want people to work, or you want to underpay somebody who's going to be there for maybe a month.
But here's the thing about, you know, going to college and school and everything like that. Great. Get your education, whatever like that. Whatever job you get, you're not going to know how to do that job until they train you how to do that fucking job.
Exactly.
So, like, yeah, it's wild and wacky out there, and people are seeing. They were like, oh, as soon as the money from the stimulus and the unemployment runs out, people are going to be running back to jobs. And we see this now. That's why you can make $15 an hour at 7-Eleven, because they can't get anybody to work there.
One more thing before we move on, just so you guys know, shit's a changing, man. Eventually, we've been saying it for a long time, but eat the rich, it's going to happen sooner than later, because motherfuckers are just tired. They're tired of working 50 hours and making like what? Maybe if you're lucky, $1,000 a week to live. Yeah. Like, yeah. So,
and that's the Film Blurred's socio-political woke minute with Brandon and Jeff. You got anything else to talk about while we're in the lobby? What else you got for us?
I got nothing else for the lobby, just because we're doing a short show today. I guess let's get into what have you watched lately.
Slow mo.
What you watching? I said what you watching?
What are you watching?
Big Booty White Girls. That's what I'm watching. No. So this week, I went deeper down a hole when it came to crooked cops and just fucked up cops. And so I started off the week and I rewatched War on Everyone, starring Michael Peña and Alexander Skarsgård. It is about two like really bad cops who just rob bad guys and are pulling all sorts of schemes, very violent stuff like that. It's a comedy. And I love this fucking movie because it's just so weird and so out there that it's, you know, it plays to my sensibilities. It looks like Peña and Skarsgård are having so much fucking fun playing these dirty, invincible cops. And it's like the first scene is they run down a mime to steal heroin from him so they can sell the heroin. And then it like ends up like it spirals and shit like that. They end up in Iceland hanging out with one of their informants who's married to a transgender bodybuilder. It's just weird. It's a fucking weird movie, and I love it. It's directed by John Michael McDonough. If you don't know him, he directed the movie The Guard or Garda. You know, it came out.
It was Don Cheadle and Brendan Gleeson.
Brendan Gleeson, yeah. And if you haven't seen The Guard, it's a really, really good fish out of water movie. And it's got that same, like, War on Everyone has that same sensibility. It's quirky, but also sort of sentimental. That's War on Everyone. And then from that, I started watching Pride and Glory, which, you know, it's Colin Farrell and Edward Norton.
Who directed that?
Gavin O'Connor.
Okay, yeah, because I knew that was from somebody notable.
Yeah. When it comes to, like, dirty cops pulling schemes, you know, it's in the line of Brooklyn's Finest. Honestly, it's interchangeable between that and Brooklyn's Finest, which isn't a bad thing because I love that movie. And this one is well acted. It's, you know, it's, you can see all the story beats. You know what's going to happen. You know, like, yada, 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 yada. And that's fine because it is so well acted. It doesn't insult your intelligence. I'm a big fan of, you know, simmering pot boilers. Yeah. All right. And then finally, I want to get into Naked Singularity, starring our boy John Boyega.
Yeah, how was it?
You know what? It was stylish, but not like overly stylish. It was okay. Like, I didn't hate myself for watching it. I didn't try to tear it apart. You know, sometimes when you watch a movie and you, like, from the get, you just don't like it. And so you try to find the faults in it. There were no faults in this. It's just like this weird movie that is like a real indictment of the criminal justice system. Yeah, with shades of like quantum theory mixed in. They quote Voltaire throughout the whole entire thing. Like one of the there's a quote from Voltaire that's right on the elevator in the first 5 minutes of the movie. And you know, for a heist film, it's all right. It's not going to change your life. It's not like the best thing I've ever seen, but I did enjoy it.
How's my girl Olivia Cooke?
Oh, she, you know, she kills it, man. She simmers. Right. She's good.
If you hear this, what up?
Yeah, you hollering?
What up? Hollering.
Yeah, so it was, you know, it was all right. It was a good movie.
All right.
I got nothing to say about it. I watched it. I enjoyed it. I never have to watch it again. But it did get me to start reading Voltaire again.
Is it a nice primer for Attack the Block 2?
No.
Okay.
It is not.
I saw he has a samurai sword in this, too.
Yeah, I mean, he uses a samurai sword. I don't want to spoil anything for you. But, yeah, no, it's you see that by watching this that John Boyega has been wasted in the Star Wars films. You know, and that he is, like, just a really, really good actor who needs he needs a hitter. You know, he needs Attack the Block 2 to put him to the next level. Because if you haven't seen Attack the Block, it is one of the best sci-fi action comedies I've ever seen.
I mean, it's the movie that put him on the map.
Yeah, I mean, that's how he got Star Wars. They saw, you know, they saw Attack the Block. But, yeah, so when is Attack the Block 2 coming out?
Fuck if I know. I don't even know if they started shooting.
Yeah, I don't even know if they have a script. I just know that it's happening.
Joe Cornish.
He's got a script. He's done with it. Yeah,
he's pulling double duty again, writing, directing.
Okay, good for him. Yeah, good for him, because I'm waiting with bated breath about for this one.
All right, anything else?
I saw Blades of Glory because, you know, sometimes you're having a shit day and you just need a Will Ferrell movie to snap you out of it. So on HBO Max, this show, you know, Blades of Glory was on. And once again, Will Ferrell is too future for me, you know, because when I first saw Blades of Glory, I hated that fucking movie. You know, just like with most Will Ferrell movies, I hate it on the first viewing. And then give me 2 or 3, 5 years, whatever amount of time later, I watch it. It's like, Jesus Christ, this man is fucking brilliant. Your Blades of Glory. The thing I love so much about this fucking movie is the face replacements for the actual skating scenes. Because I guess back in the day, that was next level technology. But now you can, it's obviously that they just put Will Ferrell's face on some dude, on some dude's body who could actually skate. And that just tickles me. It fucking tickles the shit out of me. But it's a Will Ferrell movie. It's subtly weird and snarky and heartfelt. And, you know, it just makes you feel happy by the end because, you know, everybody fucking wins.
I mean, his best movies are when they escalate. Talladega Nights keeps escalating.
Yeah.
Into insanity.
Yeah. And then like the fucking Iron Lotus skating trick and shit like that. Like it just makes my heart flutter. It's like, this is just dumb and fun.
Let's get into what I watch, which I saw finally Julia. I don't know how to say her last name. She's super, super French.
Yeah, I do.
Tatane. It won the Palme d'Or at Cannes this year. It's Julia's follow up to Raw, and Raw is a disgusting movie. This is also a disgusting movie. I like the thread of human connection, and that's like what the movie's about, being trying to connect with somebody. But like, it's a body horror movie, and it's just like, honestly, this bitch needs to go see a therapist, honestly, because between these two movies, I'm just like, you're there's something wrong with you.
I'm so into this.
It's gross. I was like, there's parts of it where I was just like, yeah, I got up and I walked out, went and got some Junior Mints, came back, sat back down, has one of the craziest final scenes I've ever seen in a movie. So
I'm here for it. I love body horror. I love like Cronenberg's earlier stuff.
Yeah, and Cronenberg's stuff is awesome. And this is just some French shit.
I felt the same way about Martyrs.
That movie's gross too.
Yeah, but I hated Martyrs, and I love body horror. I love horror in general. Martyrs I'm not gonna say too French, but it was just French enough, but also pretentious enough to make the Frenchness of it even less palpable.
All these fucking horror indie foreign films that get hyped up, they always come out, and I'm just like, sure.
Yeah?
Sure, man.
What about High Tension? High Tension was a good one.
That's the only one where I was like, all right, this was earned. Everything else, I'm just like, sure.
Right. I get you. I feel the same way sometimes about Italian horror. It's just, all right, I get it, but also, no.
Yeah. So...
But I'm really looking forward to Detained because as gross as Raw was, I loved it.
I fucking hated that movie.
All right. So you, like, they had an uphill battle anyway to win you on this one.
It was me and one other dude in the theater. We stood up and we both looked at each other and we just shook our heads at each other and just left.
Okay. All right. I mean, I'm surprised there was another person in the theater because, you know, subtitles.
It is what it is. You know, at least I didn't have to travel. It was at Market Fair. Use the A-list reservation. That's the end of that.
All right, there you go.
There's no need for me to... Yo, the last thing that won the Palme d'Or that I fuck with was Parasite.
Right.
Like, I can't even think of anything before Parasite that won the Palme d'Or that I would fuck with. I guess Pulp Fiction, but that's it.
Yeah, I don't pay attention to that. So I couldn't tell you who won last year. It's just not my thing, but... Yeah, so if you want some grossness, go see Tatane. But if you also want to get pissed off, go see Tatane, or however you pronounce it.
Yesterday was Denis Villeneuve's birthday. He turned 54, and I was on Hulu scrolling through. I was like, fuck, let me rewatch Prisoners again. I don't think we talk about Roger Deakins' photography in this movie enough. Like, it's subtle, and it's not flashy, but, like, every shot in that shit is just masterfully crafted and lit. Well, and the way the people move in and out of the frame.
None of Deakins' stuff is overtly flashy. I mean, I saw an interview with him once that he said that if you notice the cinematography, I'm not really doing my job well.
I mean, it's noticeable in Sicario. It's noticeable in
Is it though?
Like, Blade Runner.
Like in Sicario, it's beautiful, but like, you know, flashy cinematography versus just like subtly elegant.
No, and it's flashy, man. I mean, the shots of the desert, the fucking night vision, the fucking when they're entering the tunnel at dusk.
I mean, I think that's part of the storytelling. I don't think that's overtly flashy. Like we were talking about, like overtly flashy would be that movie Cherry that you hated. That we talked about a couple of episodes ago on the ASC episode. That was overtly flashy, you know, and it didn't really have anything to do with telling the story. I think the night vision shit in Sicario, it was interesting. It was unique, but it served a purpose.
Agree to disagree. Like, okay, it served a purpose, but I agree to disagree. I think that movie's flashy. And okay, I love Sicario. I love fucking Blade Runner. But yeah, this one, I was just like, yeah, like everybody put their foot into it. Like even the cast, like I've noticed, like, yo, when Viola Davis has to hand the pictures of her daughter to Jake Gyllenhaal and she can't even look at him. He's just looking at her like, yo, fuck. It's, I don't know, man. This is a slept on movie. Nobody talks about it.
Yeah, no one talks about Prisoners. Yeah.
Yeah, like everybody talks about all the other films. Everybody talks about Sicario. Everybody talks about Arrival. Everybody talks about Blade Runner, but nobody talks about Prisoners. You know, Prisoners is one that flies under the radar, sadly. And WB, if you hear this, put out a 4K version, because watching it in HD on my 4K TV yesterday, those blacks and whites were just bleeding all over the place. So put out a 4K copy for me. Yeah, so happy belated, Denny. My brother, for the first time, saw Air Force One yesterday.
Really?
That was his first time watching it. It was my first time watching it in fucking years. And I was just like, damn, like all this shit from the 90s, they just take it up to like fucking 80.
Was that Wolfgang Peterson?
Yeah.
Wolfgang Peterson always puts his foot in an action movie's ass, man. Like sometimes you just need a good 90s action movie where like the good guy is the fucking good guy.
Yeah.
You know?
It's not no black and white there. The only thing you could say it gets black and white is just because the president was doing president shit. Like, every president has blood on their hands. Sorry. Right. Sorry. Like, all you guys want an Oprah to be president. Do you really want her to call a drone strike at 3 a.m.?
Because she's going to have to.
You know? Yeah. And it might not even be a terrorist. Might be just be a house full of women and children. So think about that.
Right.
Marinate on that for a minute.
It's like, you get a bomb, and you get a bomb, and you get a bomb.
Yeah, this shit is like 20 minutes too long. Like once the main bad guy's taken out, like the movie's done. And yeah, keeps going.
Like when the plane is crashing, that could have like.
I'm just like, bro, and then there's the secondary antagonist. I'm like, bro, it's done. Like, I don't know why you're still doing this. I was like, it's finished. It's finished, dog. Like, this movie's done, and it's 15 minutes too long.
You should do a double feature next time. You should watch Air Force One and Executive Decision.
I've never seen that. I know it's Kurt Russell's in there.
Oh my God, Executive Decision. That is chef's kiss.
Maybe I got shit on the backlog. All right, so I'm going to get into the final season of Sex and the City. This is, they split, as HBO does, they do this dumb shit. They split it up into two parts, so you get 6A and 6B. 6A is 12 episodes, and 6B is 8, so 20 episodes in total. I get why people don't like this last season. It is jarring in tone. It does a lot that it probably shouldn't have done. Like, in the last, you get in the, like, let's, 6B, you get in the episode 2 of 6B, and at the end, you find out, oh, Samantha's like, yeah, I have cancer. And I was just like, okay. Y'all waited till now to introduce this. Like, this should have been like in season 4 or season 5. And it's just like, okay. And the tone, you know, for the most part, that show is a comedy drama. Mm-hmm. And the comedy and the drama were like button heads this whole season. So I get why people don't like it. I like it. It is what it is. Right. You know what I mean? The final episode is the longest episode of the show. It's fucking 45 minutes. It's an ending. And if that had been it, that's fine. But it's clearly like has more to do. Like, they should have. I think it needed a better showrunner to send this show off. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because there's just a lot that's just set up where I'm just like, okay, that works as an ending, but there's more here.
Right,
like,
right.
You guys, it wasn't like Entourage levels where the shit just stopped and then the movie is literally the finale.
Yo, I'd never finished Entourage.
Yeah. That last episode's called The End.
Yeah.
And it's not an ending. It's just literally a setup for the fucking movie that you had to wait like 3 years.
Was it 3 years? I thought it was longer than that.
It might have been 5-6. I know it was a long ass time where they, like, Entourage has a post-credit scene with Ari becoming the studio head. And I'm like, bro, this is not an ending. You guys are just setting up for the fucking movie.
Right.
Because they were talking about that movie since season 4. And that movie, when I saw the movie in theaters, because I was like, fuck it, I watched this whole show, might as well just see it. That movie was basically a series finale.
Right. I never saw the movie. I was a big fan of the show for the first like 3 seasons. And after that, I was like, oh, these people are horrible and I'm bored.
I would say, yeah, for Entourage, besides the problematic shit in it, I would say the storylines and just the way the business worked and how it was entertaining, like, season 2 and the first half of season 3 were really good because they did that weird shit with season 3 where they split it into.
Right, that's when they started doing that Soprano shit where they cut it in half.
Right after the release of Aquaman, that's when the show kind of tanked, you know what I mean? Because I was just like, eh, I don't give a fuck about it. I need the rest of this shit. It's a solid show, though, fellas. Like, to all my fellow cis straight men, give the show a watch. If your girl likes it, sit down. This is something for both of y'all can enjoy. You could talk about. There's a lot here I don't like. So I'm going to spoil this. I don't like the fact that Big and Carrie get together again. I'm just like, yo, even the girls are like, yo, you. Like, and I think the other problem is they shouldn't have had Carrie in a relationship, the relationships that she was in. Like, she was dating this weird dude, Berger, for the first half of the season. And then she gets together with the Russian. And it's like the Russian takes her into the finale.
Right, right. I think I vaguely remember the last season. Like, wasn't that Mikhail Baryshnikov or something like that? Wasn't he like...
Probably.
Yeah.
And she goes to Paris.
Yeah.
That's the last season.
Yeah. I mean...
Yeah. I was just like... You could tell they were like...
All right, let's wrap it up, B. Wrap it up.
Like... The Samantha cancer thing, I think that would have been very great if this was 2 seasons earlier, not in the fucking last 6 episodes of the show.
It reminds me of The Room where the mother just casually mentions, oh, by the way, I have cancer. And then it's like nothing. Yeah. Like, that's it. Like, that's what that sounds like to me.
I mean, she gets treatment and they follow the ups and downs of it for these last 6 episodes.
But also, it deserved more.
Yes, because Samantha deserves more. And the only thing I could say about this final season is that it carries... Samantha, for these last 2 seasons, is dating an actor, this young dude. He's, like, younger than me. And this relationship she has with this actor makes her grow as a character and as a person. So that's why I would say... That was the only great thing to come of it is like watching Samantha like
grow,
stop being a man. Cause that's how she dates like a man. You know what I mean? Cause she doesn't want to, you know, get her heart broken. And she finally like grows up and stops trying to, you know, fuck everything in sight. So.
All right.
Yeah. Well, there we go. I guess I'll get to the movie sometime this weekend.
Are there 2 movies?
Yeah. I'll get to the first one sometime this weekend. If there's time.
Don't they go to Abu Dhabi or some shit like that in the second one?
Yeah. Apparently, from what I understand, their lives are so hard, they have to take a trip to Abu Dhabi.
Which is, fair. That's when I'm having a rough time, I go to one of the Emirates.
Yeah, because rich white women got it like that.
Well, it's hard.
It's hard babysitting your kid. It's hard raising a family. It's hard.
It's difficult. It's difficult out here for a pimp.
Now we're getting to the lethal protector, Venom. Let There Be Carnage.
Oh.
So I guess I should give a little background on how I saw this. I went to see The Many Saints of Newark in a theater because I wanted to see it in a theater. I used the A-list reservation. And for A-list, I didn't want this movie getting any of my money, so I didn't use a reservation or nothing. I just walked the fuck in because I was too... I ate an edible, and it didn't kick in until, like, the last 2 minutes of...
Many Saints?
Yeah, so okay. I walked out, and the 2:45 Venom Let There Be Carnage started. I was like, oh, well, you know, fuck it. Walk in, sit down. This is probably the fastest 90 minutes I've sat through something. And I was in there with people who were into the movie, and I felt bad because, like, every 15 minutes, I was snickering, like, you know, snickering, like... This shit is stupid. And I knew people were looking at me like, this motherfucker.
This is Carnage. You can't. They introduced Carnage. He's a Venom. You got to respect it.
I would like to say this movie is almost at Insane Asylum levels of logic. And I hope they get there in the next one because I want to go into the next Venom movie and come out and just be like, all right, I'm going to check myself into the nearest mental institution because this shit is just all types of fucked up and insane.
That's what I loved about the first one. Like, let me preface this. I don't like the first movie. I think it's horrible. But I liked how it was just so fucking weird. And so did they up the weird in this one?
This movie ramps up everything by 100. Like, clearly, the only person who cares is Tom Hardy.
Because he always cares. Give it up for Tom Hardy. No matter what he's doing, he fucking cares.
Like, he loves this character. But even he, you could tell, is like, yo, fuck it. Like, everybody in this is like, fuck it. Let's cash out. And you know what? I can't even be mad because I'm just like, everybody knows what they're making. Everybody knows what they're in. The script and the dialogue is... It's garbage. Like, there's something Naomi Harris's character says. I can't even remember it. And she's supposed to be like this crazy evil person. I'm like, no crazy evil person would talk like that or say that.
Oh, man, you're selling this for me. I love how this review is just, you started off as like, hey, Carnage, let there be Carnage. Fuck it. It's like, that's how we're going to, fuck it.
I mean, that's the movie. It's just like, fuck it. Like, you don't. Yo, there's no logic to anything going on. I will say that right now. If you're looking for anything to make sense, you came to the wrong place. It is just 90 minutes of just sheer stupidity and stupidity to a point where I'm just like, if you guys go 10 times more stupid, it would have been perfect.
Okay.
Andy Serkis directed this, so is it better directed? Yes, but it's still not well. Right. The action's still not well shot. I mean, like, it's definitely better than the first movie. Like, let's put that this way. Like,
okay.
If anybody came up to me with a straight face and told me, like, yo, Venom Let There Be Carnage is a good movie, I'd fucking laugh in their face. I would laugh so hard I wipe tears from my eyes. So it is not good by any means of the words, but it is hella entertaining.
And sometimes that's all you need is fucking entertaining. But here's my question. How is Woody?
Oh, that nigga didn't give... He's like Tom Hardy. He ain't give a fuck. None of these niggas give a fuck. Like, they're just in it. Like, you watch... Like, before I came here, I watched an interview with Tom Hardy. And this motherfucker, he's a writer on this. He's a producer. And he stars in it. Like, the motherfucker cares.
Right.
But he cares... he's like Woody Harrelson. He cares... just enough
to get it made.
Yeah.
Just enough to get it made.
Because everybody knows what they're making here.
I am sold. I want to see this fucking train wreck.
Venom goes to a fucking rave.
I saw that in the commercial.
Where Little Sims is a grime rapper.
Right.
She's on stage rapping. And he gets up on stage and gives this fucking big heartfelt speech about being who you are and embracing all your quirks and shit. And then I thought he was going to start rapping because I was like, yo, if Venom starts rapping, then this gets to like an A+. And that didn't happen. He gave this big inspirational speech covered in all this glow sticks and shit. And at the end of it, he goes, Venom out. And he just drops the mic and walks off stage.
Oh, man. I wish Venom had spit some hot fire on the stage.
Yeah, so basically it's like an Odd Couple movie because these niggas can't get along, and that's basically the arc of the movie is Venom and Eddie. They have to learn how to get along together because they need each other. So
sort of like Banner and Hulk.
It is super homoerotic.
Yes. Man, you're selling this movie.
I love how Venom keeps saying,
we should be out there eating bad guys. We are the lethal protector.
And then at the end of the movie where they're fighting Carnage, they're like,
yes, we are the lethal protector.
Oh, man.
I've been saying that all weekend, and my brother looks like, he looks at me, he's like, I'm going to invest some money into a pistol and shoot your face off.
Ah.
I am the lethal protector.
I cannot wait.
I'm mad. I'm mad, though. You motherfuckers made this the highest opening movie of the year. It made $90 million. It made more money than Black Widow, more money than Shang-Chi in its opening weekend. What the fuck is wrong with y'all? What the fuck?
Man, we're all broken, baby. The virus broke us.
Fucking man. Venom. This is why everybody thinks America is the dumbest country on earth, because we give Venom the highest opening of 2021. $90 million fucking dollars.
Yeah. We're all in the madhouse now, baby. The one thing about this movie that should tell you everything you need to know about it is in the commercials, you know, how they put the pull quotes from people. All the pull quotes are from random people on Twitter.
Yeah, because they say in the commercial, oh, yeah, the fan screenings are getting rave reviews. And I'm just like, yeah, fan screening. So there it is. Yeah. I don't trust niggas. You know what I mean? Like,
it's a fan screening. Of course, you're a fan. You're going to love this movie.
The post-credit scene.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
So I'm going to spoil the fuck out of this.
Warning.
The FBI is investigating Eddie Brock because of the first movie and what happens after the first movie, because Venom, he eats people, right? So it gets so bad to the point where he's like, yo, you got to eat chickens and just eat chocolate. Venom's getting, that's part of the conflict, is like Venom wants to eat people and Eddie's like, yo, we can't do that shit no more. I don't like killing people, even if they're bad, and I don't want to go to prison.
Okay.
So Eddie, because of this whole shit happens in the church between Shriek and Carnage versus Venom. Shriek is Naomi Harris's character, and she and Carnage are in love. Okay. And they get married.
Yeah, okay. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Because of this whole showdown in this church, Eddie and Venom are wanted fugitives. And that's how it ends, with them just on the run. And then the spell happens from Far From Home, and they get transported to the MCU. And they're in a nice hotel room, and they're like, oh, what's going on? And Venom pops out, and he sees Tom Holland on the TV. He goes,
I like him.
And licks the TV. And Eddie Brock's like, what the fuck? And then some dude walks out of the bathroom and just goes, what are you doing in my hotel room?
Crossover.
Yeah, basically.
Oh, so, Venom's coming to MCU. Fap.
Clearly, he's going to be part of the Sinister Six.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, once this is all said and done, Sony's building their own little universe to have Venom be the hero. So that makes sense why Vulture pops up in Mobius, because, you know, he's the lethal protector.
Lasai.
I will say this, even the Eminem song is better. Like, all they have mad rap songs in here, and they're like, every rap song, I was like, every rap song in this is better. Like, it's crazy to me that Eminem made a better song the second time around. Like, everything's just better. It's fucking nuts to me.
It's like, it's better but worse.
I wouldn't say worse, it's just better. Let me put a full disclaimer. Don't spend money on seeing this shit at all. If you could steal it or anything, do it. Anybody tells you this is a good movie, you know, laugh at them.
I can't wait for this to be on Redbox in 2 weeks. All right, so that's
Venom. Let There Be Carnage. And I guess let's get into our main review.
Feature film review.
This morning, got yourself a gun.
All right, so sadly, this HBO Max deal has really backfired. Backfired to the point where the dude running Warner Media is getting fired.
A word?
Between the merger and this, yeah.
Okay.
Because none of anything Warner Brothers has put out this year is just bricked because of this HBO Max deal. Like, they've made no money. They've lost so much money. So when I say please see Dune, go fucking see Dune. If y'all motherfuckers can make Venom $90 million opening weekend, then there's no reason why Dune can't open to 50 or 60.
Right.
The Many Saints of Newark, I saw it in a theater. The theater, it wasn't packed, but it had people in there.
Right, right.
when it got to the part where we find out who popped Dickie, because that's all they talk about on. Everybody's like, who killed him? You find out who it is, and the whole theater gasped, and one dude went, him? And it's just like, it falls in line with that character.
But also, they kind of set it up in the movie. Like it's kind of obvious once the end comes. It's like, oh, yeah, it was fucking him. I have got very conflicting emotions about this movie.
I watched it twice because I watched it in theaters and then I watched it again on HBO Max.
Right, right. It's not a bad movie. And you said this yourself when we were talking about it, we were texting about it. It just feels like it's a show. It should have been a show.
Yeah, this should have been 6 episodes, mainly because watching it again, the crux of the movie is Dickie Moltisanti versus his best friend Harold. And that shit, it doesn't really pop off well.
Right. There's barely any resolution.
The tension for that to pop off it needed a whole episode to build up, and it wasn't built up properly. And then the way it's resolved, it's not.
Right.
It's just not. Like, they just stop. Like, the last thing you see of Harold was he goes to Frank Lucas, and he gets a pistol, and Frank's like, yo, listen, I'll back you, whatever. And that's it.
Well, no, they have that little coda at the end.
Yeah, but we'll get to that. But okay. I'm just saying, as far as the conflict between those two,
yeah,
that's it.
I mean, like, you have the shootout in the bar. And I guess that's filled with tension, but that is before
the Frank Lucas shit. And I'm just like, wait, what the fuck happened here? It feels like we are missing 30 minutes of storytelling.
We're missing more than that. Like, if The Irishman can be like 15 hours long, you know, this could have been at least a 3.5-hour movie. Because my thing about it is I don't really know whose story, like, I know it's Dickie's story, right? But it's also Harold's story.
Yes.
And then it feels like they're shoehorning in the Tony Soprano story.
Well, I think it's just planting the seed of how Tony became corrupted. And really, it's Junior's fault. Like, everything is Junior's fault.
Right. And, you know, Corey Stahl kills it as Junior Soprano.
Yeah.
One of the problems I had with it is some of the actors who were playing the characters from the show, they seemed like they were trying to do their own thing, which I appreciated. Like Barenthal as Johnny Soprano.
We never see in the show.
We see him in the flashbacks.
Do we?
Yeah, we see Johnny a couple of times in the flashbacks. And in the show, Johnny's like this good time dude. Like, he's funny, he's affable and stuff like that. And in the movie, Barenthal gives him some real, like, fucking hard-edged menace, which I appreciate. But then you get to, like, you have, like, Big Pussy, you got Polly Walnuts, and you got Sill, who just seem like they were just doing parodies of the characters from the show.
I could tell you the only one I liked was Polly. Like, that to me seemed like Polly.
Yeah, I mean, that was definitely Polly.
But like, that's it. Like, the rest of them, I'm just like, sure.
Yeah, you didn't need them. Like, Sill has the most like lines out of all of them, and you know, in his like talk with Dickie at the end of the movie. All right, that's cool, but it could have literally been any other character.
Yeah,
delivering those lines. It didn't have to be Sill.
Yeah. Its weaknesses are apparent on the second watch. Yeah. This definitely needed more time to breathe because it just feels so abbreviated and just rushed.
Right. Like, I was into it. I was invested into it. Like, all right, like, maybe this is going to be something interesting. You know, maybe this is going to be a turn. But when we got to the halfway mark, when we got to the Johnny Soprano coming home scene, and it just seemed like obvious fan service and also like clumsy foreshadowing for people who've seen the show you know? So at the, John Soprano comes home, they have his welcome home dinner, and, you know, Tony is talking about him being on the football team, and then Junior goes, oh, he doesn't have the making of a varsity athlete, right? Which is something that is said multiple times in the
first season.
The first season, all the seasons. But you didn't, like, that seemed like obvious fan service. Like, I didn't need that to happen. But also the clumsy foreshadowing is when baby Christopher Moltisanti is being handed over to Tony and he won't stop crying. That's fine because they make mention of that in the show. Like, you know, like they talk about how, you know, you didn't like me as a baby, right? But then the old woman says, you know, she gives this cryptic, like, some babies come into the world knowing much more than we think they do. It's like, oh, I get it, Grandma. You're telling me that he's crying because he knows Tony is going to kill him 30 years later. That seemed ham-fisted to me.
I mean, the only piece of fan service that we hear about in the show that I liked that we actually saw was Johnny shooting
the hair.
Yeah, that shit was hilarious.
Yeah, and there's some really subtle, like, you have to actually watch the show, nods to the show.
Yeah,
which were great. I loved how they reimagined the carnival shakedown. You know, because that's a
flashback.
That's a two episode. That's like a two episode flashback in the show, and they reimagine it, you know, for this movie, which is fucking, you know, which is great. But you know, like that seemed like it fit. You know, it felt like, okay, it's a callback to the show, but it works narratively. Some of the callbacks didn't really fit. It didn't progress this narrative.
The only other thing I would say is I love the editing. The editing is just like the show, where it's abrupt and just jarring. And that's one of the things I love about the show is, like, you know, characters will finish a line and then it'll cut back and forth between them doing whatever, and right, then just cut, or it'll cut right after a conversation.
Yeah.
That's how the movie's edited, and I love that. And I love the conversations, like, I love in the show. Like, that, I think the best scene in the movie is when Carmela and Tony are sitting down and she makes him that burger. And then you watch what is a right, beautiful, what should have been a beautiful moment between mother and son just
devolve. Yeah.
Into madness, just because that's liver. Liver's fucking insane.
Yeah. I think my biggest thing about the movie is, my problem with it is, you have to have watched the show to really, really enjoy this movie. And, you know, it should have been the other way around. You should have, like, if you get rewarded for watching the show. Does that make sense? Yeah. You should have been rewarded for watching the show with the movie, but you don't need to have seen the show to be informed about to watch this movie.
Yeah, like anybody could come in and watch this movie and get, like, a whole experience out of it. But, like, I will say the scene with the screwdriver or the,
yeah, that was harsh. That was hard.
I was just like, oh my god! And you see the nigga's teeth everywhere. Right. That's gross.
Yeah,
like, this movie's violent as fuck. Like, it's more violent than the show at times.
Yeah, I mean, it's. It's definitely more gory,
yeah,
than the show. And Dickie Moltisanti is a bad dude. Like,
oh yeah,
yeah. He's,
there's no good people,
like,
in, yeah, this.
There's, like, the only good person, honestly, is Tony Soprano.
Yeah,
you know, and then even by the end, he's like a fucking dick.
Well, yeah.
Yeah,
the family would do that to you,
right? Alessandro Nivola playing Dickie Moltisanti, he kills it.
Yeah,
like, the acting on his part is amazing, And I really enjoyed Ray Liotta's characters.
Right. Yeah. When I saw him sit down in a prison, I was like, oh, we're doing this. Okay. Yeah. I was like, all
right. Okay. All
right. I was like, I got that right away. Like, I was like, how many people are going to be confused by this?
Right.
You know?
Right. Well, you know, when you watch the trailer and you see, like, Ray Liotta sit across from.
Yeah, but, you know, Sopranos does all types of surreal, weird
shit.
So, like, I didn't know what to expect, but until I saw him sit down, I was like, all right.
Okay, all right. Right.
Yeah, you're pulling double duty here, like Alicia Vikander.
Yeah, I mean, but you know, it works. I didn't hate it.
Yeah.
So like I said, I'm conflicted by this movie because I wanted to love it. I was so looking forward to it. But you know, it was I guess you could call it the third best episode of the show ever.
I would say so.
Yeah.
I got nothing more to say. Do you?
I hated the color. Like, you saw it in theaters first.
Right.
And maybe the color translated better on the big screen. But watching it on the TV, it's got these, like, this teal and orange, like, tint to it. That makes it seem overly stylized that it didn't need to be, but you know, that's a small thing in the whole entire big bubble that is this movie. So should you watch it? If you're a Sopranos fan, you're gonna enjoy it enough, but it wasn't the mafia epic that we've been promised since the show ended.
Right.
You know?
Right. So, I mean, I know David Chase wants to do one more about the war because there's a war where when Tony becomes part of the DeMeo crime family officially, there's a war going on.
Right.
You know, sure.
Yeah, I mean, let's give it up for Michael Gandolfini though. Like, he was Tony Soprano, young Tony Soprano.
Yeah.
You know, and like it must have been very difficult for him to inhabit a character that his father made famous.
Yeah.
You know? But it felt natural. It didn't feel like he was doing a parody of Tony Soprano. It felt like he was just a younger Tony Soprano.
Right. I really got nothing to say about this movie.
It's all right. I mean, I wouldn't pay money to see it. But if you have HBO Max, fucking go for it.
We're the Film Blurred. I'm Brandon Nord, and I'm the motherfucking protagonist.
I'm the protagonist.
I'm Jeff Stewart, a.k.a. He Who Remains.
Don't come at us. It's just fucking movies.
You've been listening to the Film Blurs podcast.
Man, I just love what you guys do, man.
I never miss an episode. It's the best.
It's my favorite podcast.
Follow Jeff on IG on MindFireXL and Brandon on Twitter at BJNTweets.